It's been almost 2 months since Zimbabwe held national elections that came close to unseating President Robert Mugabe after more than 30 years, almost 30 years rather, in power. The opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai won, but not by enough to win outright, at least according to official results. A runoff election has now been called for June 27th. Mugabe has said his party will mobilize to secure a win. Critics say that means waging a campaign of fear and intimidation. And in the latest twist in this volatile situation, opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai canceled his scheduled return from self-imposed exile over the weekend after his party said it had received credible threats on his life. Joining us now on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa, is New York Times reporter Celia Duggar. She and her husband, Barry Barak, have been covering the situation in Zimbabwe, and she has a unique understanding of the government's insecurity and what it's prepared to do to shore up power. Her husband was in prison last month for reporting on the election. Celia, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You and your husband, Barry Barak, head up the South Africa Bureau for The Times. He headed off to Zimbabwe to cover the March 29th poll, but on April 3rd, he was arrested and charged with something called committing journalism. Did you ever get any explanation of what that charge means?
I think the government of Zimbabwe doesn't want independent observers of any kind, including journalists from abroad, observing the election process. It's not a pretty process to watch or to report on, and I think the arrest of my husband Barry Barak was one way of trying to scare off people who snuck into the country and sought to cover the unfolding election and the violence that's come with it.
How and when did he get word to you that he was in custody? When did you hear that he'd been arrested?
I heard within a couple of hours from a source who happened to walk by the hotel where he was staying, and it was then cordoned off with police. I got a call from my editor who'd heard from the same source, and So I was actually in the middle of making dinner when I got the call, which was unexpected and shocking and quite frightening. He at that point was still in the lodge, and the lawyers who actually went to try and go into the lodge and say they would represent him were too frightened to go in. There were so many riot police there.
Now, clearly you were concerned about your husband's safety, but you also had ownership over this story. You share responsibilities as co-bureau chiefs for the bureau in South Africa that's responsible for covering a lot of different parts of Africa. This was in your bailiwick. Did the two of you have direct communication? Did you make some decisions about how to keep covering the story?
We did. I was able to talk to Barry that first day he was in prison, and the one thing he made clear is that he did not want us to drop the story. It was a very important story. Possibly it will be the most important story we cover in our years here. And so though we'd really only been in the country, in the region for a couple of months, and he had really been focusing on Zimbabwe, I picked up the story once he was in jail and unable to continue covering it on a daily basis.
So you have children as well, right?
We do. We have two sons.
So you're... I can only imagine what was going on in your life. You are now picking up this story, heading up coverage for the New York Times of this very high-profile situation in Zimbabwe. You are also trying to be a mom to your kids, and you're also working, I imagine, trying to get Barry released.
It was definitely one of the more intense, stressful situations of my life. Fortunately, my 17-year-old son, now he's just turned 18, was like a third parent. He made dinner. He did my younger son's homework with him. He was just a rock. And I had just tremendous support from my colleagues and from many other people who went to bat behind the scenes to try and convince the Zimbabwean government to let Barry go.
He was released after 4 days in custody. He is back now in South Africa, and you are covering the story from there. Let's talk a little bit about what is going on. After a protracted wait for the results of the election to be released, a lot of international pressure put on Mugabe, the government is finally scheduled a runoff election. The latest news is that opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has not been able to return. The word of these death threats. What else are you hearing about that situation, Celia?
Well, we're waiting for more details from them. They're now in the process of trying to negotiate with other countries in the region, including Botswana and Zambia, to get some security protection for him in the country. The most stunning development now is actually here in South Africa, where there are riots occurring throughout the townships of South Africans against foreigners who are living here. There are millions of Zimbabweans who have fled their country in recent years, in part because of the collapsing economy and also because of a violence against those who oppose the regime. And it's led to tremendous resentment here in South Africa, where almost a quarter of the population is unemployed. These people coming from Zimbabwe often take jobs as gardeners and domestic workers. And with such high unemployment within South Africa, you can imagine the anger against those who've come and will work for very low wages.
You had a piece over the weekend about intimidation in the Anglican Church in Zimbabwe, how Mugabe is exerting pressure in that part of society. Have you been able to glean any more information about other ways that this intimidation is manifesting itself there?
Well, it's highly targeted, but it's very broadly targeted. It seems that virtually any group that is not controlled by the ruling party, its leadership is being intimidated. Even the church, the teachers in Zimbabwe, for example, have a role as civil servants of supervising the polling stations. And in places where the ruling party lost a lot of ground, they wound up being scapegoated. Many of them have been beaten and driven from their homes. The opposition party workers, the frontline workers who are the linchpin of their campaign, hundreds of them have been beaten and have fled, many of them to Harare or out of the country.
So, Celia, on June 27th, when there's this runoff election, what kind of climate is this going to be for this poll, when journalists like yourself aren't even going to be able to be there on the ground to cover this, making the situation even more opaque? What are the odds that this is going to be a free and fair election by international standards?
Well, a lot of it depends on what the regional countries do in insisting that the violence stop and in introducing observers into the region to watch the elections. Despite it being a far from perfect process the first time around, so many people in the country are desperate for change that they risked violence to go to the polls and vote against Mr. Mugabe. The question is, how successfully will they have instilled fear in the broader population? Will they still have the courage to go to the polls?
Last question.
I'd say that's very much an open question.
Last question. Do you or Barry plan to return to Zimbabwe anytime soon?
We're still talking about that.
Celia Duggar is the co-bureau chief for the New York Times in Johannesburg, South Africa. Celia, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.